Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's topic, your resume stinks. Or better said, how to prepare your resume. Here we go.
Okay, welcome to Burke, Virginia, Mark.
Good to see you, Mike.
This is becoming a regular thing for us. So
it got clients in Washington, D.C., so I'm here regularly.
Yeah, that's great. So we're going to do something different today, which most people might not think fits into the mold of what we've been doing, but today we're going to talk about resumes.
Yeah.
Preparing your own resume.
Yeah. And I bet people are thinking, wow, imagine. They're talking to me about how to be a better manager, and then they're suggesting I leave the company? But that's not what we're suggesting.
That can't be it.
No.
So what are we suggesting? What's important to the managers and listeners of this podcast about maintaining their own resume?
Yeah, the first thing is that if you have a feeling that your resume is something you need to stay off your desk, you're right. There's still the old adage that a resume is a bad thing to be, you know, it's to be heard but not seen. In other words, you talk about your resume in an interview, but you don't actually show it to anybody at your company. That's true. Resumes still have a stigma. If somebody sees your resume on your desk, they're going to assume that you're
looking.
Job hunting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. And that's a negative. No matter, even if you have a very enlightened boss, they're going to perceive that as a negative. If nothing else, they're going to be frustrated by it. The point, though, is that in the last 20 or 30 years, companies have really turned over the responsibility of managing people's careers to the employee. You need a document to capture your career success. And the document that's perfect for that is your resume. So if you change your thinking to see your resume as a career history, you're going to be fine. And you just need to keep it off of your desk. Do it at home. Do it after hours when everybody's gone. You must keep your resume current. I would say that fully 70% of the resumes I get have errors in them. When I look at the resumes, the vast majority of the errors are on the most current jobs, and I know what's happened. I mean, easily half the time when people call me, they say, Mark, I got an interview coming up. I really need some help. And I can hear by the urgency in their voice that they have essentially gotten something on short notice, and they prepared a resume on short notice, and it looks like crap. I mean, in fact, I joked with you earlier, I would bet anyone on this podcast $100 that their resume is horrible. And I get double if I find an error on the resume. Now, not one they spend time working on after this podcast, but the one they had beforehand. It's atrocious. But if you see it as a career maintenance and management tool where you capture things that you'd forget 2 years later because you can't go back and recreate things 2 years after the fact, it's a very powerful tool, and you've got to do it.
Yeah. Would you say that, well, I'll just put it this way. In my experience, it has been when I've needed a resume, it is when I've least expected to need a resume.
Yeah.
Not like I got fired, but the opportunities of a lifetime are those things where, a target of opportunity shows up.
Right.
Those are the good jobs, generally.
Yeah.
And that's when you're least prepared to do it.
Yeah. And if you're good, you're going to be busy all the time at work. If you don't schedule time for this on what you'll find out on a quarterly basis, if you don't know how to put a resume together, and I would bet easily 40 to 50% of the ones I get are not well put together. If you don't know how to put it together and then you rush something, it's just not going to look professional. And the really good jobs are going to be interviewed by or going to be screened for by people who really know what a good resume is like. Look, if you want to stay in second-class jobs the rest of your life, that's no problem. Have a second-class resume. But if you want something, if you want to impress people, you need to have it done in advance.
Okay. Let me ask you one of the most common questions you hear from people about resumes. How long?
Exactly. And this is where people get it wrong. I see 25-year-olds with this one, with this one blown out the window. The answer is, no matter who you are, one page, period.
One page.
One page. Not one and a quarter if you're 45 years old. I'm 45 years old. I think you're about that. We both have one-page resumes, period. Okay. Now, okay, if you're Neil Armstrong and you landed on the moon, you get to have a two-page resume.
Okay. Well, if you're Neil Armstrong, you don't need a resume.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Wouldn't that be cool? I've always joked with people when I talk about resumes that, first man to step foot on the moon.
Period.
Yeah.
In a resume.
Yeah, in 48-point type.
That would be pretty good.
Yeah, in what the newspaper business would call second coming type. One page. The second page won't get read. because they'll assume it's from a long time ago in your past. Look, if you're a CEO of a $500 million company and you've been vice president of marketing, vice president of operations of Fortune 500 companies, okay, fine. Page and a half, 2 pages. But 99% of the people who are listening to this podcast, one-page resumes, period.
Well, that makes it pretty tough. I've heard and read, and I'm sure you've seen it, where people say you need a lot of white space. You need to...
You know, it's all the same. It's interesting. I think computers cause something like that as well, in the sense that now I have a graphics program, so therefore I'm an artist. Or I hear that white space is important, so I'm going to magically assume that I know how much white space makes a resume beautiful. White space means nothing on a resume. Nothing. In fact, my resume, I think the margins are 0.5 on left and right and 0.75 on top and bottom. And it's jammed full of 10-point type. You're trying to distill your entire professional life, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, down to one page, and you think it'd be cute to have white space? Now, some people would say, well, the reason I need white space is because I'm going to go ahead and take my one pager and turn it into a two pager. We hate that as recruiters. Look, interviewing, job searching, the job transition market, interviewing particularly, is an artificial reality designed by companies to keep people out. We don't want to see what you want to show us. We want to see what we want to see. And what we want is to make it simple. If you put a cover letter on top of it, we've already got 2 pages. You staple a second page of your resume to it from stuff that's way back in your career anyway. It's probably not relevant. It was probably happened even before computers were invented. Well, then, you know, we just don't look at it. So we never get there. So one page. If I'm at my age, 45 years old, 25-year career, if I can fit it on one page, so can the vast majority of our listeners.
Actually, you know, I don't think most people, we've probably talked about it before, but most people here probably don't realize that you were, for a number of years, you were a recruiter.
I was, yep, exactly, and so for 7 years.
You come from a very unique perspective.
Yeah, here. I would be willing to bet, and I get 5 to 10 resumes every week by email. Hey, take a look at my resume. These are friends who just want me to just take a quick look because they've added a new job. You know, I have a friend who left, who got out of the Navy, went to work at a high-tech company. I helped him with the Navy resume. I helped him with a high-tech resume, helped him get into a top 5 business school, helped him do his resume from there in order to get hired a consulting firm, looked at his resume again when he went down to interview as a chief of strategy at one of the biggest companies in the country. Looked at it every single time. Took me maybe 15 to 20 minutes, but he started out with great raw material, and he had a one-pager. So yeah, I spent 7 years. I would be willing to bet in my lifetime I've seen close to 50,000 resumes, and almost all of them are horrible. But the great thing is, at the end of this podcast, everybody who's listening is going to know how to have a good one. And when you have a good one, once you do the work, it's going to take you a few hours to get it done right the first time. When you do the work, it stands out so much that people will talk to you. Even if your credentials, if your is not exactly aligned, they won't care because your resume will say, I'm a professional. It will sing to them. No question.
Okay. You looked at a lot of resumes and helped people out. Do you recommend that... our listeners who are having trouble or challenges with a resume go out and help from a professional?
No, like, let me stop you now. No, don't pay me. And in fact, I'm sure you'll correct me. I'm not going to say on air, I'll be happy to take a look at people's resumes because I'll be deluged with resumes. I just can't do that. Because if I'm going to look at a resume, I'm going to look at it from top to bottom. But no, what you're paying for, resume preparation services are essentially typing services. And if you can't type, you got no business being a manager in at any size company anywhere. So no, don't do that. And if they say, well, we'll ask you a lot of questions. Look, I have some friends who do some very technical work. If you've got somebody who's got a really nice document, a desktop publishing system on their computer, that doesn't mean they know anything about the nuclear power business or about the machine tools business or about designing car parts and those kinds of things. And they'll mess up the acronyms. They'll mess up all kinds of stuff. So no, don't pay for it ever. Once you listen to this podcast, you know what you need to know.
Okay. You said earlier, 10 type font.
Yeah.
Times Roman, Courier.
Yeah, yeah, almost, you know, definitely
it,
not
does it
Courier.
Matter, or does it
you
matter?
Know, it does a little bit. I mean, if I had to recommend 2 or 3, I'd say Bookman, Times New Roman. But Courier, I think, is the one that looks like an old-fashioned typewriter. That's not effective. Look, you're not a typeface expert. Neither am I. Choose Times New Roman. You'll be fine. Now, I actually have mine set in Verdana. Verdana, which is a little bit unusual, but then my resume is a little bit unusual, obviously, because I'm never going to get a job ever again. I like my job, thank you very much. But Verdana is one of those, what we call a sans serif font. It doesn't have those little feet on it. It actually looks a little better, I think, on the page for me. But most, 95% of the people who are listening need to go probably with Times New Roman or Bookman. Those little feet on the bottom actually make it more readable. And particularly if you're going with 10-point font. 10-point is about the right size. Now, if you're only 23, 24 years old, you're listening to this, you've just started your corporate career and you want to go with 12-point, that's fine. But if you've got a 2-page resume or a page and a half and you're at 12-point, put it in 10 immediately and watch yourself shrink to one page. No problem at all. Hmm. Now somebody might say, well, gosh, 10-point, that looks small, you know, compared to others. Says, yeah, the vast majority of resumes you've seen are horrible. So why do you care whether it looks like you want to look different than everybody else's? Trust me, from a person who sees thousands of them, you want it to be different. 10-point, Times New Roman, or Bookman.
Okay. How about, you want it to be different? How about putting it on purple paper or some other kind of marketing technique to get some attention?
I love marketing. I love good marketing. I particularly love it when somebody who is going up for a job against me uses purple paper, because I want them to market themselves well. No, I'm just kidding. Feel free to put it on purple, but don't confuse marketing with effectiveness. I don't care to be marketed to. Do you know what your resume is designed to do, Mike? It's designed to do two things. Tell me the jobs you've had and tell me how well you've done them. The color of the paper means nothing. Now, I won't argue with you that a really well-crafted cover letter, which we'll cover in another podcast because a good cover letter really can make a difference. A well-crafted cover letter with a marketing phrase or something clever on there, sent to somebody particular with a particular message, I'm all for that. But your resume is largely a one-dimensional object designed to show what you've done and how well you've done it. Don't get cute with it. White paper. Print it. If you're going to print it on your printer, which is fine. You don't need a laser printer. You absolutely can use one of the ink, what do we call the other ones? It's not laser printer. It's a
inkjet.
Inkjet. Yeah, yeah. A $100 Hewlett Packard printer or something like that. Totally fine at highest quality. And get good paper, certainly. But do you need Crane business paper, 100% rag content paper? No, you don't. I'd like to see something more than copy paper, but it's not absolutely critical. I've gotten great resumes Xeroxed on regular copy paper that put all the others in a pile of shame because they're relevant and they've achieved a lot in the areas that I want them to achieve in. So,
okay, how about other formatting hints in terms of name and address, email address, right, and kind of the format of the overall resume.
Look, and again, this is really kind of background. We really want to, the key to it is, of course, the meat of it, but it, people always ask that. I tend to give a little bit more leeway here. In other parts, our listeners have probably figured out there are some things I'm strident about, I really care about. Actually, I have some flexibility on a lot of things I talk about. But so often, if I suggest that you can be flexible on something, people go crazy thinking, well, that's an area that I can mess around in. And then they mess up the fundamental reason why the document exists. If you want to put your name, address, email address, a home email address off to the left, or you want to put it all in one line at the top, that's fine. I generally recommend centering your name, then below it your address, then below it your phone number, and then below it your email address. Underline your email address so they recognize it. If you want to put your webpage, if you have your own webpage, your own blog, absolutely put those on there. I would certainly check to make sure that they're relevant. If you're interviewing for a coding job, but it's not in web stuff, and your blog is about your cat, probably not relevant, so it's not helpful. Just because it's something about you, quote unquote, doesn't mean I'm interested in it. We're not bad people. Okay, we are bad people. It's not that we don't care. Okay, we actually don't care. We're looking for what jobs you've done and how well you've done them. But generally, centered and bold. If you want to go to 12-point type, if you've got the room at the top to put your name in 12-point, that's fine. Whatever you do, make sure that the phone has an answering system, an answering machine, or voicemail, and evaluate your answer. I've talked to my kids. I have two great kids in college. I'm lucky to have them. I love them to death. I get on them when they say, yo, guys, it's Kate. You know what to do. So, you're a senior in college. That's cute for your buddies, but it's not appropriate for a recruiter calling you. And she's going to get recruited for, engineering jobs in corporate America soon. And the message should be something like, hi, this is Kate. I'm not available. Please leave a message. Simple as that. Your email is something that should be checked every day. Look, if you've got an email address at work, but you have a funny one at home, let's say you've got Superman loves Batman at google.com or at yahoo.com and you want to get a different one, get one of your buddies to send you a Gmail invitation. If somebody needs a Gmail invitation, send us a note. I'll be happy to send them an invitation. They get free Google Mail and put your name, markhorseman@gmail.com, for instance. That's not my email address at Google. Markhorseman@gmail.com so that you can and check it every single day. And if you're smart, you know how to arrange so that your Outlook or whatever can go grab that mail, grab that Pop Mail account. It's got to be checked every day. So pretty straightforward. If you want to string them all across in one line, that's fine. I generally recommend centering them, each one of them, right on top of one another. Name, address, phone, and then email address.
Okay. But after that, the rest of the resume. Reverse chronological.
Exactly, reverse chronological. You don't even have to put history or anything. People say, well, what about high school? What about college? Nope, we leave them off. Actually, college, we'll talk about that. It goes down at the very bottom. It's not a very big deal. Don't get me wrong. It's important to have it. It's not a big deal. You know, just because you went to Harvard doesn't mean it goes at the top of the resume. Okay. What we're going to hire you for is what you've done and how well you've done it. So after that, it is you can put a little line. This is job history, but you don't need to. You can just start with your most recent job. And the rest of the resume, except for the education stuff at the bottom, is very simple. Each job has three parts to it. A little bit of admin. We'll go through the details in just a little bit. The job responsibilities in a paragraph, and then accomplishment bullets below it. And that's it. So if you've had eight jobs, you'll have eight chunks of text on your resume. A little bit of admin, a little bit of responsibilities, and some bullets. One after the other, after the other, after the other, and then down at the bottom, your education, and you're done. Okay, so each job, think of it as having three parts. Really, the trivial part is the administrative portion, and it kind of runs right into the responsibilities. You know, I just thought of something, Mike. Might not be a bad idea for us to post a sample resume so they can see what a good one looks like. Just a real simple one. It'll take out the name and everything else. They'll get some sense of what one looks like really professionally done, 10-point. Be happy to do that for everybody. But each job, again, admin to begin with. The way I recommend doing it is putting the dates first, November 2004 to November 2005. I've got that bold and underlined and then followed by a colon. So it says, these are the dates I've had the job. Then the next thing is you put the job title, administrative assistant or deputy plant manager, whatever your company called the job. If the job title is really unusual or if it's very vague, you know, the classic one is I'm a senior manager. Well, okay, that doesn't really help me. You know, if you're a senior manager at Coca-Cola, I want to know senior manager in what? So you might put senior manager Diet Coke marketing team. Okay, that's helpful to me. It'll give me some more information. So dates, including months, we're going to come back to that in just a minute, including months, not actual days, but months, not just years, the title, and then the company you work for. So November 2004 to November 2005, senior manager, Diet Coke marketing team, Coca-Cola Corporation, company, and then finally the location, Atlanta, Georgia. Okay. I recommend all of that be bold and underlined, because if that's the only bold and underlining that you do on your resume, other than your name right at the top, it makes it easy for us to see where each job starts and stops. That's not to say there's not a character turn between each job. There is. I mean, basically, each job is a block of text followed by some bullets there are no returns between the text and the bullets. Then there's a space before the next job, and you start right off with the next dates and so on. Don't leave out the dates, don't leave out the months. If you put 2004 to 2005, I'm sorry, whether you think it's okay or not, every recruiter I know immediately draws, what conclusion do you think?
You worked there for about a month, from December 2004 to January 2005 or something.
Exactly. Like that. We just know there's something going on. Now, you might say, well, there's nothing going on. Yes, but we just wasted 2 minutes of your precious interviewing time. 2 minutes of a 30-minute interview is, well, how much is that? It's almost 10% of your interview. We're wasting. Actually, when you get done with chit-chat, it is. It's more than 10% of the interview.
If you get that far.
Exactly. Yeah,
right, if you got 100
resumes.
That's
right. I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. You're doing my job for me. Absolutely. Like, what is this guy trying to hide? And, you know, now, why do you think we think that, Mike? Why do you think recruiters think that when people just put years, why do we tolerate ourselves making that conclusion that somebody's hiding something?
Well, you got so many resumes to go through. You're looking for reasons to weed people out.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases.
Yeah, exactly. That's why the single biggest mistake I see in terms of content, not in terms of just, you know, 4 pages long or spelling errors, typing errors. And of course, the spelling errors, people spell check them. They use the wrong word. Spell check is not foolproof, obviously, the keyword being fool. What happens is that people mix their responsibilities in with their accomplishments, or put it more simply, they put some bullets down on their resume. We'll talk about those in just a moment, but the bullets are all responsibilities. If you list nothing but your responsibilities in the job, to me, you're no different than the guy who did the job but got fired and is trying to avoid you knowing that he got fired, and so he just lists responsibilities. It's not enough for me to know that you had a job. That's the first half of the equation. The second half is how well you did it. If there's no accomplishments on the job, I'm thinking, well, you got fired, or you didn't do it well enough to stand out in any way, shape, or form, which means I don't want to give you a chance in my job.
Do you think most recruiters approach their job in a cynical fashion?
Yes.
They're looking for reasons to eliminate
but
you.
But let me put a fine point on that, and this may be in the, you know, somebody, some manager might call and say, you're putting too fine a point on it. No, recruiters are not cynical. We pay attention. We're wise. I mean, we're not cynical. What's the way to put it? We're experienced. Look, you look at 100 resumes that all leave off the month, and 70 of them are trying to hide something. Look, no offense, but we're going to draw that conclusion about the other 30. We need heuristics just like anybody else. We need cheats to get through this interview, the resumes of 1,000 that are in our inbox. People say all the time, well, I sent it in, but nothing happened. Unfortunately, they mistakenly believe it's because recruiters are not doing their job. Well, so many resumes are so bad. Yes, something happened. We said no, but we don't have time to write a letter to everybody. So no, I don't think it's cynical. I can understand why somebody would draw that conclusion. You may have a perfect resume, but because you didn't know what you were doing, you engage in 4 or 5 mistakes that a rookie would, or somebody who didn't have a good career did. I'm sorry. We don't know enough about you. This is simply a process to weed things out. Are we going to have false negatives? Absolutely. We would much rather have in the recruiting process a bunch of false negatives, in other words, saying no to the wrong people, than what's the opposite of that? False negatives. The last thing we want is to hire somebody who turns out wrong. So we say no if we're given half a chance. It is exactly the same as a criminal justice system. Both systems are designed to avoid bringing people inside who shouldn't be there. In the case of recruiting, we're trying to avoid hiring somebody who shouldn't have been hired. That's a false positive. In the criminal justice system, we're trying to avoid a false positive, meaning saying you're guilty when in fact you're not. We'd rather have some people out on the outside who perhaps should be in prison, that just to avoid the chance of putting somebody in prison, right, that shouldn't be there. Same thing here.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the criminal justice system, because, you know, probably lawyers are the only people I dislike more than recruiters.
Well, I tell people all the time, recruiters are the best sales, the most hated salespeople in the world, but they're good at it because they have to say no to people all the time about their company, and they have to make them like them. They have to leave the, oh, I really, boy, great company, he just said no to me. Okay, so we talked about admin. The next thing we have is 2 to 3 to 4 sentences of responsibilities. Okay, these are things that ideally would come from your job description, quite frankly, but so many job descriptions, as we all know, are so terrible you may not be able to go there. But you want to describe what the responsibilities of your job are. Okay, something like responsible for the budgeting and coordination of a $3 million quality improvement program, responsible for motivating 15 call center representatives to achieve quality, quantity, and sales goals. Now, those are just first sentence examples. It might go on to be oversee. By the way, starting with an action verb, oversee, supervise, reduce, enhance. That's a great way to start those sentences in the prose part of the responsibilities part of the job. And this continues all one line. I mean, you don't start a new paragraph, if you will. After you finish Coca-Cola Atlanta, Georgia, you can just put a dash and put responsible for supervising 12 Diet Coke marketing specialists / professionals in producing marketing and advertising campaign in support of Diet Coke. The number one diet branded soda product in America, period. And then continuing as if you're writing a paragraph, continuing without a carriage return, two or three or four more sentences which describe your responsibilities more fully. It might be manage a budget. It might be involved in a project on this. You might be on a corporate cost containment project team. You might be involved in an international marketing cross-functional group. You might have safety responsibilities. You might be on an anti-discrimination task force. You might be one of the corporate recruiters. Those kinds of things. You want to have 2 to 3 to 4 sentences that relate to your job. Okay, the core responsibilities of your job. Okay, we want to know basically what job you're responsible for doing. Because then the next thing that's going to happen is once you finish that paragraph looking like thing, you're going to hit carriage return, and then you're going to start putting in bullets. And you're going to list bullets, which are essentially accomplishments that relate to your job responsibilities. So if you're one of your responsibilities is motivating 15 call center representatives to achieve quality, quantity, and sales goals, I'd like to hear how well you did on your sales goals, on your quality goals, and on your quantity of calls. Okay, achieved 94% of quality standards within 2 months on the job. Ranked number one in the company in volume of calls over a 3 month sales push period. Ranked fifth out of 95 teams in sales quota achieved during quarters 2, 3, and 4 FY 2004. Okay. Right. Reduced cost by 9% by creating innovative login system, increased sales by 4% by coaching on core sales operations or core sales techniques with top performers on my team, helped get promoted two representatives who had been previously offered jobs but had failed to get through the interviewing process, reduced turnover from previous manager by 85%. Always starting with an action verb telling me how you improved sales, how you reduced costs, how you improved quality, how you reduced waste. All those core things that people talk about over and over again.
So if there were like 10, this goes without saying, I think.
Right.
If you had 10 responsibilities, you're going to write down 3 or 4 of them. You're going to pick the 3 or 4 that you did well with.
Sure.
That's where you kind
Well, yeah, with a caveat. You don't want to pick the 3 or 4 that are trivial if you didn't do well on your top five.
You do well, and right, they're relevant.
Yes,
to the position that you're relevant to the position you were in, but even more so relevant to the position you're currently interviewing
for. If you're a manager, if you're a director, for instance, in a call center, and you have five managers who report to you, and so you're responsible for call volume and call quality and customer service metrics. And you list you list your top three bullets as being part of a diversity task force. Nothing wrong with the diversity, but that's really not what your primary job is. It's a major additional duty. But you have five bullets, and the first four are all about this diversity initiative. I'm not impressed. I want to know about the diversity initiative. Don't get me wrong. But you and I are going to spend 5 or 10 minutes talking about how well you really did as a director in the call center.
If part I get of your that job, far.
If you get that far, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, you make a good point. This is the second time you said it about if you've got get that far. The resume has a very clear purpose. To get you an interview. That's what it's there for. The beauty of a great resume is not only does it get you an interview, Mike, it then increases the chances you're ready for the interview because you've told them how well you did your last job. And when they ask you for examples of things from your past that relate to what they're going to be doing, the classic behavioral interview that everybody ought to know how to do, in which we have future podcasts scheduled to go over, if you look at that, you will be able to pick bullets right off your resume. You will have thought about them if you're maintaining your resume correctly, and you will be able to talk about them for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes cogently. If you don't have responsibilities listed, you're going to be scrambling around for accomplishments, for examples for your behavioral interview. So yeah, it not only the purpose of the resume is to open the door, but a good resume not only opens the door, but pushes you halfway through it because it tells you exactly what you should be preparing for in those interviews.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah. And so you might have 3 or 4 sentences and you might have 5 or 6 accomplishments. So you'll have 5 or 6 bullets. The key thing is I should be able to look at each bullet and those are bullets that relate to you. Those are accomplishments that are yours. The previous person in the job can't claim those bullets. Okay. Unless he happened to do the exact same percentage improvement or the exact same call sales improvement or reduction in waste or whatever the case might be. Those accomplishment bullets. Again, they've got little bullets, little round dots to the left of them, flush with your left margin. Okay, you don't need to indent them. Please, folks, don't indent them as a way to create white space. All that means is if it's a good long bullet, you're going to end up having a carriage return, and you're going to steal space from the bottom of your resume. You want each bullet to fit on one line, if at all possible. A lot of times, if somebody says to me, I have a page and a half resume, Mark, I said, send it to me, let me look at it, and I figure out a way to reword the bullet that you don't lose any detail. You don't need to tell us the whole story. You just need to give us the highlight so that we can then ask a question about it in the interview. I end up pushing those bullets off to the left. So don't indent your bullets thinking that you're making your resume pretty with all that gorgeous artist in you creating white space for us. Us recruiters really don't care about white space. Thank you very much. But those accomplishments should be yours, whereas the responsibilities part of your job, each one of those, essentially the guy who had the job before you, he or she could claim those responsibilities. The bullets are what make it yours, and of course tell us how well you did the job. That's it. Okay. And then you've got a carriage return. So there's a line of white space between your present job and the job you had before it. And yes, every recruiter, you know, we talked about this Diet Coke manager job, and I happen to have a friend, a great guy who left Kellogg and went to Diet Coke and is in fact now in Korea. And, you know, he's got a great resume. And if your resume says November 2004 to November 2005 for your last job, the top job in the reverse chronological order, the job below that ought to say October 2004 is an ending date or November 2004 is an ending date. It's okay if you say October and then the next one starts in November. We're not gonna get picky about that. But we're going to look for your employment history. And if you've got a two-year gap, be ready to explain it. Don't be defensive. You know, I once read in Fortune magazine or one of the magazines something about, somebody answered a question about, you know, I had cancer for 2 years or had leukemia and I took 2 years off and I'm wondering, should I leave that out? Oh, yeah, you should try to avoid talking about that. No, I got to tell you, no, you address it straightforwardly. I had cancer. I was 2 years out of the workforce. I'm back. I'm ready to go. Be ready to talk about breaks in employment. I stayed home and had a child. Good for you. Half the people on the planet couldn't do that accomplishment. We admire that you did it, and we are not going to discriminate against you because you did it. On the other hand, if you're defensive and attempt to hide it and fudge your dates, I don't have any problem with taking time off your family. I do have a problem with lying. And if you change the dates, you're lying, period. Don't lie on your resume. Marketing is not lying. Sometimes people say, well, it's a marketing document. I'm trying to market myself. Yeah, there's a difference. And if you don't know what it is, I don't want to hire you. Simple as that.
Okay. Now I have my heading completed. Right. I've done all my job description, the job title and location, all that. Right. I've done the description responsibilities. Right. I've done my bullet points and my accomplishments. Right. I've done that for all my jobs. What next? How about
at the bottom? At the bottom, you put your education. For most people listening to the podcast, I'm guessing they have an undergraduate degree, and it will be very simple. I'm gonna list mine. Okay, BS. Bachelor of Science. You don't have to write out Bachelor of Science. BS, Mechanical Engineering, United States Military Academy, West Point, New York, May 1982. Period. That's it. If it's been 3 to 5 years since you graduated and you graduated summa cum laude or magna cum laude and you want to include that, or by the way, Dean's List really doesn't impress us, even if it's from Harvard. Grade inflation now being what it is, 3/4 of the student body seem to be on the Dean's List. But if you graduated magna or summa cum laude, okay. And if you only have two jobs and you want to include a couple of key extracurricular activities, you're president of your fraternity, absolutely go ahead and put it on there. In fact, I would argue that in some cases, for a fairly young person, 2 to 3 years out, if you wanted to include a job as president of your fraternity or a unique job that you had in college on your resume, absolutely would do so. And if you worked through college, I would expect to include it. I don't want to see 12 Taco Bell jobs in a row. But if you had a job that was anything other than menial, or if you had a menial job and you kept it for 4 years and worked your butt off to pay for college, I'd want that to be a bullet in the job that you were. You know, if you worked at Taco Bell for 7 years and maybe you're only an assistant manager, but in 7 years you paid for your entire college yourself, I want to see that. I really like that. In fact, that's a pretty impressive thing. But it would be BS or BA followed by your concentration or your major, followed by your school, followed by where your school was. That's to avoid people from University of Texas. No offense, San Antonio. University of Texas, San Antonio, just writing University of Texas, right? Because there's a difference between the flagship state school and other schools in most states. Part of the system, but not the flagship. UT is in Austin. And if it doesn't say Austin, we're going to ask you. And then the date you graduated. Simple as that. If you've got a master's degree, you know, MBA, Kellogg School at Northwestern University, concentration marketing and finance, March or June, you know, June 2005. Great. Want to put that too. That one goes on top of your BS. Basically, your most current education goes on top. Don't put your high school GPA. Don't put your high school stuff on there. Pretty simple and straightforward. Again, if there are key extracurriculars in your MBA and you want to put those in a line indented below your MBA, above your BS, fine. But I wouldn't put much more than that.
Then after your education, then hobbies, you know, golf, knitting,
you know, I
swimming.
There are people who have probably already
podcasting.
Yeah, yeah, this is a hobby. Tell our clients that. You know, it's funny. If you Google me, you can find a 2-hour presentation that I think is broken down into three parts that I gave at the Kellogg School at Northwestern last January, and I'll be going back up there soon, I think. And one of the things that I talk about is how terrible their resumes are. But that is a little bit of an artificial situation where the Kellogg is actually managing the system very, very tightly. Harvard does this, Fuqua does it at Duke, the Stanford Stanford School does it as well, Chicago does it. It's not always true that this is what we're recommending here is the perfect system. It absolutely is once you're out in corporate America and doing this on your own. But if you're at an MBA school, you're going to get some subtle differentiation. And they recommend more extracurricular activities and so on. I don't. And your personal hobbies and interests, they've just about gone the way of references. And here's how we feel about references. Don't waste the space, because if we need your references, we can get them. Because you'll give them to us. Now, you should have them at the ready. You should have people's names and phone numbers ready to give out and addresses. So if they want to send a questionnaire or call somebody, that's fine. I get called for references all the time. I'm happy to do it for people I know well. But what happens is that people put a bunch of stuff on there, and then that leaves them less space. Or they think they can go to two pages, which doesn't work. It leaves them less space for their accomplishments and their responsibilities, which is really what we want the resume to do. References are a throwback to the time when you had to be from a well-to-do family. Your references showed who you were and where you went to church and where your father went to school. That's not the way, you know. America really truly is, for the most part, a meritocracy now. It's not about who your father is or who your mother is or whether you went to the right prep school or whether you went to the right undergraduate school. Those things make a difference, but only for a year or two after you graduate. And then it all boils down to performance. The person who works hardest, who's smartest, who takes care of the people around him or her, and gets ahead the most is the one who's going to do the best in the long run. So,
yeah. Okay.
Simple. So
that's it.
It's boring. I mean, it really is. And, you know, I think I've said this before on podcasts. Management, good management is boring. It's repetitive. It's slow. It's not pretty. It's not sexy. This is not a marketing document that you're going to sex up and make cool. Just don't even bother. And I'll tell you something else. I want to put a little aside here. There are probably people who are thinking, well, I don't really need a resume. And by the way, some people in Europe might be thinking, gosh, is this the way we do resumes? This is the way major corporations want resumes to be. My brother's an executive at a major European firm. This is the way his resume is. This is the way executives want to see your resume. A good sign of your resume doing well is an executive, not an HR person, an executive, a line executive, is seeing your resume. Look, as I mentioned to you before, we have listeners in Kalgoorlie, Australia. It's a small company. It's a successful drilling consumables manufacturing shop. They have 12 employees. The owner and the manager need a resume. Not because they're going to go out and look for another job. That's not what your resume is about. The first reason you need a resume is to manage the history of your career so it's at the ready. You know, it's possible that you could be, if you're in Western Australia, somebody could ask you for a donation to a political party. I'm sort of extrapolating here a little bit. And you give $100 to a politician and the person gets elected and says, you know, I need somebody to serve on this committee. Can you put together a background sheet for me? You can either spend 4 hours trying to get it right, have a mistake, and have it published on the internet and have you look like a fool. I'm making this up, of course, although that happened to a friend of mine in Texas, and he was very embarrassed. Or you could have it done right, make a couple of small changes, really tighten it up, and then you're there. But if there are managers and shop floor foremen who need resumes in Western Australia, then almost anybody who's listened to this podcast who works at a major corporation in Europe, in Asia, in Australia, in America, they need a resume too.
Okay. So how do you maintain these things? How often and what do you, you know,
yeah.
What's the process there?
This is really something that, you know, once you know the format of a resume, of course, you can practically throw this podcast away. But this is really where I think smart people make a difference. You mentioned about how when you need your resume, you never seem to have the time to put it together when opportunity strikes. And I've been trying to jog my memory about that quote about success is where opportunity meets preparation or something like that. But you should make time on your schedule, and I know everybody's busy this week, but 3 weeks from now, their schedule is empty, once a quarter, 45 minutes to an hour at the end of the workday. Look, you're not that busy. You could schedule it now for the end of this year. You could do it between Christmas and New Year's, okay? And you review it every quarter. Basically, what I do is I'm looking at my resume. If I do something really successful, I've got a client, I just wrote a note on my resume, a handwritten note, so that when I come to my quarterly review, I can look at it and say, I'm going to add that bullet. And over the course of each quarter, I'm adding bullets to my most current job. When my jobs change, even if I, you know, if I didn't have to have a resume internal to my company, and I got to get in a new job, I will then add that new job at the end of the quarter. And I'll add a couple of bullets for that first quarter. Now, in the first quarter, I may not have any great bullets, but I'll put down what I did. In the next quarter, I'll have 6 months, and I'll have a couple of more bullets. And then in 9 months, I'll have a couple more bullets. And then I can start thinking about, you know, those first couple of bullets I put on there really weren't all that great. I'm going to go ahead and take them off. And it's a constant process of looking at what you have, looking at what you've done, seeing which is best, and taking it off. With one important caveat. In the time that you're maintaining it on a quarterly basis and drawing notes in the margin when you do something really well or one of your people gets promoted ahead of schedule, whatever is unique or different at your firm, as you're doing that, your resume might end up being longer than a page. Oh, it might be a page and a quarter.
God forbid.
No. Yeah, well, it's in draft form. And here's where you get really good resumes. You might have a page and a half resume because it's been a year or 18 months since you used your resume and had to tighten it up. But now you're being interviewed for a job at another part of your company. Or maybe a job that requires a little bit different skills and your boss really, the boss over there really knows you and really likes you. Okay, that's great. Or you're going to a different company, perhaps, or maybe a different division of your company in a different part of the world. By having some additional bullets on your most current job or your last two jobs, you can look at all of the bullets rather than just two or three or four or five bullets. You can look at 10 bullets each. Yeah, that pushes the bottom of your resume off to the second page. But you can look and say, okay, if I have to cut it down to five or six bullets for these couple of jobs, which one of these bullets are most relevant to the job that I'm interviewing for? If your job is marketing and finance, and you're interviewing for a finance job, you want to have the bulk of those responsibilities, or the accomplishments, I mean, be finance rather than marketing. So by reviewing your resume every quarter and adding something every quarter, you know, again, you don't have to cut stuff out because your resume may end up, it's okay to have it longer than a page. That stuff at the bottom may get pushed over. That's okay because it'll allow you to tailor it just right if you have the right stuff for that job. That you're interviewing for. And again, we're not trying to get you to leave your company. We're not suggesting everybody jump ship. Plenty of times you have to interview for a job within your company. Now, somebody asked me the other day, Mike, they said, well, but jobs inside my company don't require a resume. Yes, but they do require somebody who remembers their history and knows the accomplishments they've had and has prepared answers to the behavioral questions that they're going to get in those interviews. The resume becomes the way you prepare for internal job interviews, even if they don't require your resume because you're an internal applicant.
Yeah, good point.
Yep.
Okay. Couple quick, before we wrap up, a couple other questions. How about, you know, we have a lot of technical folks on listening to us. How about at the top having, or at the bottom, a list of technical skills?
Yeah,
you know,
Solaris, PhDs, Unix, SQL. Linux, all that stuff. No way. No way. Now, people will tell you, oh, well, they're using resume scanning systems. Yeah. And if you think the computer only looks at the first third of your page to look for a bulk of all the stuff together, it doesn't. It scans the entire thing, and it looks for Unix and HP and open source and blog and all those kinds of things. So if it's in there, it's in there. So if you had success delivering code on time and under budget, tell me what the code was written in. You know, delivered 1.6 million lines of C++ code in a DB2 environment, blah, 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 on time and on budget. There's the stuff I need to know. Now I have context for it, and I can ask you more questions. All too often, what I find is that tech people jam everything in the top, thinking that it's nothing but a resume scanning system. And then when I pick one thing out and I ask, How much have you done with that? Oh, well, it's been a while for that one. And then suddenly, because I got lucky and picked one you weren't that good with, I paint that entire paragraph with the weakness of that one. Hmm. Spread it out throughout your resume. Don't bulk it up at the top.
In the you context of a particular
exactly.
accomplishment.
Exactly. Or responsibility. Yeah.
Okay. How about the relatively common, somebody at the very top puts an objective, you know, seeking a job as a manufacturing engineer in a high growth company or
yeah.
some other kind of objective.
Yeah. We turn down all the ones seeking for manufacturing engineer in a high growth company because we're not a high growth company. I love that. I only work for a really great company because I'm only a really great guy. No, absolutely don't do it. Look, if you go to a one page resume, somebody out there ought to do the math and tell me how many, if you have no smaller than half inch margins, because I think your printer won't go any smaller than that. How many lines of text you actually get. I mean, you can actually mess with kerning a little bit, I think, or line spacing in Microsoft Word. But no, you don't need to waste that line and the carriage return that would be necessary to separate it from everything else. Don't do it. Because you may very well, the recruiter may look at it and go, you know, Ozan's really good for this, but boy, he'd be really great for that. Oh, it says this objective on it. You don't know what's going to happen. Mm. That's okay.
Okay. How about a minor variation of that? This one being not the focus so much on the job or position they're looking for, but more a summary of them as an individual, kind of high charging, highly motivated, inspirational manager / leader, facilitator, yeah. seeking blah, blah, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. That's the key. Superman does not need an ad firm. He just doesn't. It's always the same. Highly motivated, supercharged, double deluxe. You almost want to say, God, can I have fries with that? It's a super meal. You know, it's a happy meal. No, don't do it. We don't believe a word of it. They all sound the same. I'm amazed at what I know people who are low energy, very nice people, but they're low energy and they're not top performers and they call themselves high energy top performers. So, no, leave it out. You don't have the room. If you've had any experience at all that we're excited about, job and how well you did it, let your job history speak for itself.
All right, that's great. Why don't you just summarize for us the top five or so points in terms of what people should be getting out of this podcast.
Good way to close out. One page, 10-point font, contact information at the top, reverse chronological job history, each job has admin, responsibilities, and accomplishments, and review it religiously every quarter. Period. That's it.
Super.
Thanks, all right. Mike.
Thanks, my friend.